The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press and the Religion News Service. Our first article was published by the AP on February 23, written by Nicole Winfield. What happens to the leadership of the Catholic Church when a pope becomes sick or incapacitated? Vatican City. While the Vatican has detailed laws and rituals to ensure the transfer of power when a pope dies or resigns, they do not apply if he is sick or even unconscious. And there are no specific norms outlining what happens to the leadership of the Catholic Church if a pope becomes totally incapacitated. As a result, even though Pope Francis remains hospitalized in critical condition with a complex lung infection, he is still Pope and very much in charge. Still, Francis' hospital stay is raising obvious questions about what happens if he loses consciousness for a prolonged period, or whether he might follow in Pope Benedict XVI's footsteps and resign if he becomes unable to lead. On Monday, Francis' hospital stay will hit the 10-day mark, equaling the length of his 2021 hospital stay for surgery to remove 33 centimeters, 13 inches, of his colon. His prolonged illness and age, 88, have revived interest about how papal power is exercised in the Holy See, how it is transferred, and under what circumstances. And it points to the legislative loophole that currently exists in what to do if a pope gets sick so that he can't govern. The Vatican Curia. Francis may be in charge, but he already delegates the day-to-day running of the Vatican in church to a team of officials who operate whether he is in the Apostolic Palace or not, and whether he is conscious or not. Chief among them is the Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin. Other Vatican functions are proceeding normally, including the Vatican's 2025 Holy Year celebrations. What happens when a pope gets sick? Canon law does have provisions for when a bishop gets sick and can't run his diocese, but none for a pope. Canon 412 says a diocese can be declared impeded if its bishop, due to captivity, banishment, exile, or incapacity, cannot fulfill his pastoral functions. In such cases, the day-to-day running of the diocese shifts to an auxiliary bishop, a vicar general, or someone else. Even though Francis is the Bishop of Rome, no explicit provision exists for the Pope if he similarly becomes impeded. Canon 335 declares simply that when the Holy See is vacant or entirely impeded, nothing can be altered in the governance of the Church. But it doesn't say what it means for the Holy See to be entirely impeded or what provisions might come into play if it ever were. In 2021, a team of canon lawyers set out to propose norms to fill that legislative gap. They created a canonical crowdsourcing initiative to craft a new church law regulating the office of a retired pope, as well as norms to apply when a pope is unable to govern, either temporarily or permanently. The proposed norms explain that, with medical advancements, it's entirely likely that at some point a pope will be alive but unable to govern. It argues that the Church must provide for the declaration of a truly impeded see and the transfer of power for the sake of its own unity. Under these proposed norms, the governance of the Universal Church would pass to the College of Cardinals. In the case of a temporary impediment, they would name a commission to govern, with periodical medical checks every 6 months to determine the status of the Pope. At first, the promoting group was accused of imprudently choosing topics that were too sensitive and controversial, said one of the coordinators, canon law lawyer Geraldina Boni. But then a widespread consensus formed, she told the AP. Even Francis's own canon lawyer, Cardinal Gianfranco Girlanda, acknowledged some sort of norms were necessary if the Pope incurably, then irreversibly, lost consciousness or otherwise the ability to perform human acts. The problem is, who declares that the Pope is in a situation where he cannot govern? He told Italian daily Il Giornale in 2022. Girlanda largely backed this crowdsourcing initiative's idea, proposing a committee of medical experts to determine if the Pope's condition is irreversible. If they confirm it is, the Roman-based cardinals would be summoned to declare the Pope cannot govern, triggering a conclave. What about the letters? Francis confirmed in 2022 that shortly after he was elected Pope, he wrote a letter of resignation to be invoked if it became medically if he became medically incapacitated. He said he gave it to the then Secretary of State, Cardinal Tarcisio Bertone, and said he assumed Bertone had delivered it to Parolin's office when he retired. The text is not public, and the conditions Francis contemplated for a resignation are unknown. It is also not known if such a letter would be canonically valid. Canon law requires a papal resignation to be freely and properly manifested, as was the case when Benedict announced his resignation in 2013. What happens when a pope dies or resigns? The only time papal power changes hands is when a pope dies or resigns. At that time, a whole series of rites and rituals come into play governing the interregnum, the period between the end of the pontificate and the election of a new pope. During that period, known as the sede vacante, or empty see, the camera ingio, or chamberlain, runs the administration and finances of the Holy See. He certifies the pope's death, seals the papal apartments, and prepares for the pope's funeral and burial before a conclave to elect a new pope. The position is currently held by Cardinal Kevin Farrell, the head of the Vatican's laity office. The Camera Ingo has no role or duties if the pope is merely sick or otherwise incapacitated. Likewise, the dean of the College of Cardinals, who would preside at a papal funeral and organize the conclave, has no additional role if the pope is merely sick. That position is currently held by Italian Cardinal Giovanni Battista Re, who is 91. Earlier this month, Francis decided to keep Re on the job, even after his five-year term expired, rather than make way for someone new. He also extended the term of the vice dean, Argentine Cardinal Leonardo Sandri, who is 81. Next, we have an article from the Religion News Service. It was published on February 21, written by Jack Jenkins, and entitled, Trump's Pick to Run White House Faith Office Sparks Theological Turf War. A religious row has erupted among conservative Christians over President Donald Trump's decision to reappoint Paula White Cain to run the White House Faith Office, with theological fissures erupting within Trump's Christian coalition as leaders stake out different positions on the Florida pastor. The debate escalated on February 19 when Doug Wilson, an influential Reformed pastor who has emerged as an off-sided religious thinker in conservative circles, derided White Cain, a Pentecostal pastor, on his podcast. While responding to others on his show who were critiquing White Cain, the Idaho pastor referred to her appointment as a bad pick for all kinds of reasons. In a separate interview with RNS on Thursday, Wilson said he hails from a conservative Christian quadrant that objects to women preachers in the first place, and described White Cain as an erratic woman preacher who has been all over the map. He went on to describe White Cain, long regarded as Trump's closest religious advisor, as that kind of person about whom embarrassing video footage can be rolled out almost at will. It is not the greatest pick in the world, he added. The remarks are the latest in a back and forth that began shortly after Trump announced earlier this month that White Cain would once again be heading his faith office, a reveal that concluded a week of faith-themed appearances featuring the president and the vice president. While White Cain's appointment was widely expected, she served in the same position near the tail end of Trump's first term, news of her return to the White House sparked blowback in some conservative Christian online spaces. Unlike critiques from Trump and White Cain's numerous liberal detractors, the latest round of criticism has pitted prominent Pentecostal and charismatic Christians, such as White Cain, who have made up an important part of Trump's evangelical Christian base, against a cadre of conservative Calvinists, including a subset influential among some of Trump's advisors and cabinet members. Matthew Taylor, a scholar at the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies, who has studied the influence of charismatic Christianity on Trump, said the broader evangelical discomfort with Pentecostalism, traditions that engage in practices such as prophecies, faith healing, and speaking in tongues, has been around for some time. During Trump's first campaign and term in office, Taylor said, it was moderate evangelicals such as Russell Moore, then a Southern Baptist, who voiced their disapproval of White Cain as well as Trump himself. But this time, the fight is more of a sibling rivalry between different factions of the Christian far right, Taylor said, with Calvinists such as Wilson becoming power players over the past 4 years, alongside stridently conservative forms of Catholicism that have garnered favor with Vice President J.D. Vance, a Catholic convert. Paula White and her circle truly dominate the Trump advisory circles, the evangelical advisory circles, he said. Now you have these kind of natalist, radical, traditionalist Catholics that see an avenue to power through J.D. Vance, and you see these kind of constructionist, Calvinist types who see an avenue through Pete Hegseth and maybe Russ Vaught. So now there's real power and policy in play. Efforts to reach White Cain for comments were unsuccessful, but the criticism quickly spurred her supporters, particularly people who, like White Cain, operate in Pentecostal and charismatic traditions, as well as preach a prosperity gospel or wealth-focused theology, to publish video testimonials in her defense. What was the date that it became okay in the body of Christ, all of a sudden, to trash people by name that you've never met? Said Jonathan Shuttlesworth, a Pentecostal pastor of Revival Today Church, who was among the first to rush to her defense, in a video posted to X. The pastor, whose church meets in both Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and in Texas, is seen as ascendant among Trump's religious advisors, posting on Friday that he was traveling to the White House to discuss and write national policy for religious freedom. In his video about White Cain, Shuttlesworth said many of her critics were Calvinists who believe in God's sovereignty. So God made a mistake this time? I thought God knows what he's doing and God has everything planned and we just accept what he planned. Don't you teach that? Shuttlesworth later added, maybe you're just a jerk. Shuttlesworth was echoed by Lance Wallman. Wallnow, a fellow charismatic Christian who prophesied Trump's 2016 victory and hosted a campaign event featuring then Vice President candidate J.D. Vance during the 2024 election. I can't believe all the people, mean-spirited people, upset with Trump for working with Paula White. What is up with these wackos? Wallnow asked in a Facebook Live video. You know what it is? I think a lot of guys just don't like women preachers. In his interview with RNS, Wilson did not deny his opposition to women's ordination, but noted White Cain's appointment could be an example of Trump being transactional. The president, he argued, may have appointed White Cain solely as an expression of gratitude for her long-running support. Leaving her in charge of an office, he's going to pay no attention to. However, Wilson said he would have preferred Trump appoint someone such as the Reverend Franklin Graham to the office, saying the president could have done a lot better and shored up support among the more responsible, dissident right types, as opposed to Jesus wears a MAGA hat kind of thing. Wilson, a self-described Christian nationalist whose profile grew during Trump's time away from power, carries weight within Trump's new administration. He co-founded a denomination that officially opposes women in combat and includes a church attended by Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, who has praised Wilson's writings. Wilson, who appeared on programs last year hosted by Trump allies Tucker Carlson and Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk, has also spoken at events on Capitol Hill alongside Russell Felt, whom Trump appointed to run the Office of Management and Budget. Vought was referenced on Wilson's podcast this week by author Joe Rigney, an associate pastor at Christ Church, Wilson's congregation. Rigney called the choice of White Cain a whiff by the Trump administration, but celebrated the selection of Vought, who is widely credited as the architect of Project 2025, a sweeping conservative plan for changing the federal government that has largely overlapped with Trump's actions during his first month in office. Would I rather have someone with Paula White's theology in Russ Vought's job? Or would I rather have him in the OMB, Rigney said. And it's like him, because he's actually going to do the things I want. Rigney's comments come after a week of defending Vought from criticism from alumni of Wheaton College, an evangelical school, and Vought's alma mater. When the school retracted a statement celebrating Vought's confirmation as OMB secretary, after alumni published a public letter voicing outrage, Rigney called the move a case study in how supposedly conservative Christian organizations are hijacked and steered by the left, and has since championed the school in a separate letter by conservative Wheaton alumni. Asked whether he considers Vought a theological ally, Wilson said he doesn't know enough about his personal beliefs to pronounce on it, but I would guess that we would be on a similar page. Wilson insists he is not in the mix when it comes to power players in Washington. Although he told RNS in an email shortly after Hegseth was confirmed that he was very grateful, the former Fox News host was now tasked with running the U.S. military, Wilson explained on Thursday his only direct connection to the Secretary of Defense is that he knows people who know him. He also was willing to criticize Trump associates other than White Cain. While he celebrated Elon Musk's efforts to rapidly and dramatically reduce the size of the federal government, for instance, he said he hoped someone would explain the gospel to him, lamenting that Musk has had a number of children with women out of wedlock, which Wilson described as a serial harem of concubines. Even so, the debate over White Cain appears to have done little to dent support for Trump overall among Wilson and his supporters. Asked how he felt about the first month of Trump's term, Wilson was jubilant. "It's been Christmas every morning," he said. The last of today's articles was published by the Associated Press on February 15, written by Bruce Schreiner and Dylan Lovin. "Kentucky bourbon bottles signed by the Pope raised thousands for charity." Lexington, Kentucky. It sounds like the opening line of a joke. What happens when the Pope gets his hands on two bottles of Kentucky bourbon? But it actually occurred, and the punchline is heartwarming. The autographed bottles raised tens of thousands of dollars to help poor and sick people, as well as homeless cats and dogs. The plan was concocted by the Reverend Jim Sitchko, a Kentucky-based Roman Catholic priest. He saw an opportunity to turn a signature Kentucky product and his access to Pope Francis as a papal missionary of mercy into a way to help those in need by auctioning off bourbon bottles signed by the Pope. I understand that at times people say, "What is this priest doing?" I get it, Sitchko said in a recent interview. "I think outside the box all the time." His unconventional idea raised about $30,000 when Sotheby's auctioned off two bottles signed by the Pope, plus another bourbon bottle autographed by former Super Bowl winning quarterback Tom Brady. The proceeds are being divided among organizations selected by Sitchko. He presented the first check on January 31 to Pause for the Cause, an animal rescue organization in Lexington, Kentucky. Other checks will help hospice patients. The Catholic Diocese of Lexington, where Sitchko is based, will use some of the money to help people in need. It all began several years ago when Sitchko gave Francis a bottle of hard-to-get Pappy Van Winkle bourbon as a gift when the priest visited Rome. After that, Sitchko routinely presented a gift, often Kentucky bourbon, when encountering the Pope as part of his role as a papal missionary of mercy. Sitchko is one of hundreds of such missionaries appointed by Francis. They are assigned to travel the world, spreading kindness, forgiveness, joy, and mercy to people they encounter. Sitchko, 58, said he travels the world about 300 days a year as a missionary and evangelist. During a visit to the Vatican last year, Sitchko carried with him two bottles of bourbon, but with a different mission. He wanted to spread good to others by having the Pope sign the two bottles donated by Willett Distillery in Kentucky. The bottles carried special seals and contained Willett bourbon that had aged for 10 years. When the time came, he mustered the nerve to seek the papal signatures. "I just pulled out the bottle of bourbon with a pen," Sitchko recalled, "and he looked at me and he signed it. And I was shocked. And then what I did was I pulled out the other bottle and he signed that." Sitchko wasn't ready for what happened next. He looked at both bottles, and he looked at me, and he said, "Father, which one of these is mine?" Sitchko recalled. That led to an uncomfortable confession. "I said, neither one of these are for you. I want to come up with a creative way to auction them off for the good of others," Sitchko said. And that's how it came about. Sitchko's teammate on the project was Drew Kulsveen, the master distiller at Willett Distillery. "From the first conversation, our door was open, knowing this contribution can impact countless people in need through his work," Kulsveen said in a statement. Kolsveen and his wife joined Sitchko on the journey to Rome. He called it a tremendous honor, watching the Pope sign the bottles of bourbon. Sitchko received a warm welcome from workers at the animal shelter when he arrived, carrying a $7,375 donation. Anna Spreitzer, vice president and general manager of Paws for the Cause, said it would help pay for an expansion of the shelter that was underway. Part of the donation, however, will be passed along to another animal rescue group, she said. That brought a hearty approval from Sitchko, he said. That's the way it goes, give and receive. Sitchko said he expects to return to the Vatican in about 6 months, but doesn't know if he will ask the Pope to sign more bourbon bottles. It loses its flair if you're constantly getting him to autograph things, the priest said. Sitchko said he hopes his work has a ripple effect, inspiring acts of kindness by others. It can be as small as opening the door for someone or letting someone go ahead of them in the grocery checkout. Everyone can do something, Sitchko said. It costs nothing to be kind. Our world is turning into a very, very angry world, he added. And I think it's time that we just chill out a bit and recognize truly what we're called to be. And that is brothers and sisters. We may all have different skin colors. We may have different ways of life. But I think we all come from the same place, and that place is love, and love of God. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope you'll listen again next time. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.